Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. This is Dave with my hoarse voice from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radioland. As I said, I am Dave, your caregiver's caregiver, coming to you globally, live through the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. We have an exciting show planned for you today. Maria Blahn, known for her encouraging caregivers to find, live, and share their passions. She's a really fun lady who actually was a caregiver to her disabled brother at one time, probably still is a caregiver when she relieves her mother from her caregiver duties. So she's an expert on avoiding burnout, and she's going to share some tips to caregivers today on how to follow their passion. So stay tuned. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out when they start to tell you that if there's an emergency, to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. And the reason is because they know you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above their needs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And caregivers are the same way. We also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like you are stuck, like many people do. If this is your first time tuning in, you can learn more about me, my radio podcast, my books, my videos, by going to my website, DaveNass.com. That's Dave and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, A, I'm sorry, I always mess that up. N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam, DaveNass.com. And if you just tell me your name and email, guess what I'm going to do for you? I'm going to send you two really neat gifts. First, a copy of my first book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And I'm going to send it to you in ebook format through your email. And if that wasn't enough, I have a free report entitled 10 Mistakes That All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't. Now, don't miss out on these cool freebies, folks, worth over $20. All right, enough of that. Let me unmute my guest so I can welcome her. Welcome to the show, Maria. Sorry I had to sit through all of that introduction stuff for all our first-time listeners.
It's awesome to hear your passion in helping caregivers. So it was my absolute pleasure, Dave.
Wow, is that what I have, passion? I was always trying to figure out what that was. Thank you. So tell us, Maria, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Briefly, who are you and why are you an authority on caregivers and finding their passions? Go right ahead.
All right. I am Maria Blahn, an international speaker and author of Live an Inspired Life and the soon-to-come-out Living Passionately, 21 stories of people who found their passion and how you can, too. My caregiving career began actually when I was 12 years old. My father was in Japan, and my mom got pneumonia. Well, who was there to take care of her but Maria? So I took care of her for the week and a half when he was away, and then when he came back it was much easier. And then that was good practice for me because when I was 16, my mom had my youngest brother, Evan, who progressed very nicely until he was 4 months old, and then he started having seizures. His development actually went backwards, and Evan has epilepsy, cerebral palsy, and also he's at the developmental level of a three-month-old. So he's a baby, always is a baby, even at 33 years of age. And when my mother would travel, then I would be in charge of taking care of Evan, which has been a joy and also a lot of tremendous learning for me. And one thing about caregivers is that more than 65 million people, or 29% of the U.S. population, provides care for chronically ill, disabled, or a family member or a friend. And sometimes that's an adult, and sometimes that's a child or teenager that helps out.
Wow. That is amazing. So you were how old when you first had your first caregiving responsibility?
16? 12 years old.
12 years old. So what did this 12-year-old think when they had to take care of this person in need? I mean, did you instinctively like it? Did you find that you had a gift for it? What was going through that 12-year-old mind of yours?
Well, I love my mom, and I love my brother. You know, I really enjoy taking care of people. I've always enjoyed babies and feeding them and changing them and bathing them. So for my brother, that's always been a big part of our relationship. And, you know, older sisters, part of our mission is to agitate our brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
I even did that. You know, he would have cradle cap on his head, and I would pick it off, and he'd make faces. You know, so I was mostly a good caregiver, but sometimes I was an annoying older sister.
Yeah, we have three daughters, and I noticed that the middle one was really had a gift for caregiving, because when she was younger, she liked to always be around babies and do things around it. And then when our next-door neighbor became elderly and disabled, she really took an interest in the elderly as well. So he says, well, look at Cindy. She loves babies, and she loves really old people who are in need. So, you know, obviously we believe that she had the gift of caregiving, and she did, as she turns out, since she's in her 40s now. Her son happened to be autistic. They adopted because she couldn't get pregnant. And then after they adopted, she had two daughters. So we hear that story a lot. So let me ask, what type of things did you have to do for your brother, Evan? Is that his name, Evan?
Yes, his name is Evan, and people call him Evan from Heaven because he is so delightful. He's, to be around him, I feel calm because, you know, he is there to be taken care of. That is his role in life. And I, you know, I have fed him, changed him, bathed him. It's very important with his epilepsy to give him his medicines at the right time.
Yeah.
And so those kind of things. And my brother Evan is in the hospital now, and so I actually went to visit because, you know, it's hard on my mom to keep going down by herself, and,
sure.
You know, it's nice for Evan to have support. So I drove to Pittsburgh, and on the way I'm thinking, you know, why is Evan a part of my life? You know, what is the reason? And I just was bawling in the car because I realized Evan got my first job as a keynote speaker at a caregiver conference.
How did that happen?
Because I have experience as a caregiver, and I have other tools to help people, then he is the reason that I got that first job as a keynote speaker. So I'm just very grateful to Evan for all that he's given me, and I wanted to do something special for him. So when somebody is just in a bed and they can't really do much, I thought, what can I do that would be nice? And so I brought some lavender, and I brought some massage oil, and I rubbed his feet and his legs. So it felt good to me to be helping him. And amazingly enough, my mom said, look, his pulse went down by 20 points, and his blood pressure went down as well.
Sure.
So it was really nice to see that confirmation.
Well, I'm a massage therapist, among a lot of things I do. I wear many hats, and that's one of them. I'm not licensed or anything. I just do it as a hobby. But a lot of people know that massage therapy is very therapeutic, and aromatherapy is very therapeutic. And so how old is Evan now?
Evan is 33.
And yet he has the mind of a three-month-old. Is that what you said?
We don't know exactly what goes through his mind, but physically, you know, he can't really communicate or move. But, you know, he functions at the level of a three-month-old.
So what kind of feedback did he give you from the massage and the therapeutic stuff, and how does he communicate? Because everybody communicates. How does Evan communicate to you guys that he's either happy or that he's not happy?
Well, normally, if this time he was under so much medication to get his seizures under control, mm-hmm. so there really wasn't any physical reaction. We could just see on his monitors his mm-hmm. heart rate went down, his blood pressure went down. But when he's feeling well, if he doesn't like something, he'll scrunch up his face. He'll clamp his mouth shut if he doesn't want to eat something. Usually he loves to eat. It's so much fun to feed him. And he does like whistling. So if we whistle, sometimes he'll say, ah, and make noises back.
Oh, how sweet. Yes, these people are a gift from God, I'm telling you. And so grateful that he's that you are in his life, and that your parents are in his life as well. Let me ask you another question, Maria. As you know, caregiver burnout is a state of physical, emotional, and mental exhaustion that may be accompanied by a change in attitude, from positive and caring to negative and unconcerned. And they may experience fatigue and stress and anxiety and depression. They may also feel guilty if they spend time on themselves rather than on their ill or elderly loved ones. What is your prescription for caregiver burnout? Because that's a place that no caregiver should be going to. But unfortunately, it's in epidemic proportions. And I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are. But just from my experience, I would guess that between 80 and 90% of all caregivers out there are suffering from some form of burnout.
I would agree with you, Dave, and it's so important to address the challenges so that we can find solutions. If we pretend like nothing's wrong, no solutions, no opportunities will come. So I did create the CARE prescription. C stands for connections, and all of your listeners have great connection with you, because I'm sure that you know of agencies around that can help people with respite and other issues with caregiving.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so all your listeners are very lucky. And A stands for ask for help. Often we think that we are the only person in the whole world that has these struggles, and what's wrong with us? You know, why can't I figure this out? But just know that all of your listeners, if you are struggling with somebody, something, there's somebody out there that's had the same struggle, and you know what? There's somebody out there that overcame that same challenge. So
that's right.
Be bold, ask for help.
And it's so hard for caregivers to ask for help. So hard, because it's a pride thing. It's like, I can do this. I can do this. All right, go on.
Yes, and I can do this is a wonderful attitude, but we can only do so much. And when we call in other people for help, we're helping them, because it feels great to help people.
Absolutely.
So if we can turn it around and look at it from that perspective, when we ask for help, we're helping people around us to be empowered as well.
Sure. And then the next letter, R.
C-A-R is for recreation. This is something that I learned from my parents. I would be taking care of my brother, and they would say, Maria, why don't you go out and do something fun with your friends? I'd say, no, I have more to do. I want to help Evan with this. And they would say, no, it's important for you to get out and have fun, and then you'll come back refreshed. And that made all the difference in the world. And going out for recreation is something that I've remembered when I've raised my children. My husband and I always got a sitter at least once a week. We go for a walk together, go swimming together, something that was fun for both of us and helped to revive us.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, we did a show just a few weeks ago, and we had a caller. It was an elderly lady who was a caregiver to her husband who had just died, so now she technically wasn't a caregiver anymore, yet she went visiting out elderly people, so she was continuing her caregiving because that's her gift, and that's what she called it, this gift. But then she confessed that when she was a young mom of three boys, she was just, that was the hardest part of her life. She says, much harder than looking after my husband. And he was a big guy, and she's a little lady. And, you know, sometimes he would fall out of her chair. Sometimes she'd have to lug this big, heavy chair in and out of her car. So I would watch her saying, oh, my gosh, you poor thing, take a break. She goes, no, I'm okay. But she said when she was a young mom raising three young boys, it was so hard on her. And she would have given anything for somebody to come by and say, can I just help you out so that you can, you know, go take a break or go to Starbucks or something? She would just cry because she felt she was all alone in the world. And there are so many young moms with young children, and probably the most underappreciated class of caregiver out there is the young mom with young children. So to my audience, I challenge you, if you know young moms with young kids, they need a break. Call them up and offer to help somehow, you know, even for an hour. Let them go take a Calgon moment and melt away their stress. You know, most people don't appreciate that. It's like, well, what do you mean? You're a mother. You signed up for this. You know, quit complaining. You know, do your job, you know, which is, you know, they just don't get it.
Right. They don't get it. And for parents who have children with disabilities, there are funds so that they can get respite help. Actually, my oldest daughter is a respite worker, and so she goes and spends time with children who have disabilities, giving the moms, the dads, the family a break so that they can come back refreshed and excited to be with their children again.
And there's actually government agencies that will help you get refreshed, really?
Yes, the Mental Health Association in New York.
So if other people in other parts of the country, can you send them in a direction to at least start their research on how to find out?
Yes, I will.
Maybe during the break.
Talk about where to post it, but yes, I'd be happy to get that information so that more people can learn about respite help. And one thing I did when I had my two young girls is got together other mothers with young children, and we would get together, we would trade having each other's kids, and so there was adult interaction, and we got some alone time as well. And there was no money exchanged.
Now that sounds like a support group, which is a great way to survive as well. Be a part of some kind of a support group where you're getting emotional support, physical support, spiritual support, and so on.
Yes, support groups are wonderful.
Did we cover all the letters? Did we do the E?
There's one more letter, E, and that is, yes, I'm glad you're keeping track. The last E is experience everything. We have a tendency to only want to experience the good things in life. Life is not just what we see on TV where, you know, everything works out perfectly. It's all of the high times, the low times, and if we, like you were saying, going through the grief is rough, but if we try to go around it, it's much worse. If we have the courage to go through grief, to face the hard times, and really dig deep into our souls, ask for help, find guidance, then our life really turns around. So we experience those low times, and then we'll have the ability to experience the high times because we're not running away from the scary parts.
Yeah, that's great. Well, this is a great topic that we're talking about, Maria. Thank you so much. We're going to take a break now for a couple of minutes, so we'll be right back.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships. Available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Hear what Lynn Barrington, best-selling author of Daddies and Daughters, published by Simon & Schuster, has to say about it. You think you have it bad? Read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you will be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy Award winner, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch? This book will be an encouragement to anyone who reads it. Charlene just won't let the promises of God go. She's hanging on to her positive, godly attitude, and I look forward to the day when she will receive all that she's believing that God will do for her. In the meantime, she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. Her smile has gotten just as big as it was before her stroke. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. I'm glad to know her and her testimony. Read this book. You will be encouraged regardless of what you're going through. So get your copy of One Arm, One Leg, and 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But if you purchased it from the author's website, Dave and Charlene Nassani will personally autograph your own copy. Just go to DaveNass.com. That's Dave, and then N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, S like Sam.com. DaveNass.com. Oh, and while you're on his website, don't forget to leave your name and email address so that Dave can send you his free report, 10 Mistakes All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't, just for visiting the site. There are a lot of resources, videos, and links to his radio podcast. Again, DaveNass.com. That's N-A-S-S. Now let's rejoin Dave Nassani and his guest on Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Program on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.
And we are back, and I just want to tell everybody how much I love that song, You've Got a Friend, because I'm telling you, there's nothing more valuable and priceless in the world than a true friend, someone who will stick by you through thick and thin. And I bet you most people can count on one hand the friends that they still have after, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you know, maybe from high school, that have managed to keep in touch, especially after a tragedy happens and you or your spouse becomes disabled. Then the friends kind of disappear really fast. And thank God that there's still one or two in our lives from before, when my wife had a stroke. For those of you who don't know, my wife had a stroke 19 years ago. She lost her speech, paralyzed on her right side, and she is just an amazing person. That's why I wrote that book, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words. And take advantage of going to my website and filling your name out and getting that free report, because this week only we're giving a free book in ebook format, and you will really have a great time reading this book and sharing it with others who need to hear all the stuff that's in that book about the grief process and surviving burnout, etc. So, Maria, sorry for that shameless commercial. You are back. Are you there? Can you hear me?
I am here.
Oh, good. I never know if they can hear me or not. You're doing an awesome job. For those of you who are just joining us, we're with Maria Blahn, and she is an expert. You don't mind me calling you an expert, right?
No, that's fine.
She is an expert on teaching caregivers and people in general, but caregivers especially, how to live their lives passionately. I mean, everybody has passions. Some people you look at, especially caregivers, and they look like they were sentenced to a prison prison cell, you know. They're just, oh my gosh, you know, I got this job to do. And maybe they were excited about it in the beginning. But, you know, over the years, it's become a burden. It's become a job. And they saw their dreams that maybe they had before they became a caregiver being unfulfilled. And Maria says that you don't have to feel that way, that you can actually continue to put your passions in your life, even as a caregiver. And I'd love for you, Maria, to just expand a little more on that theme of passions, bringing passions back into caregivers' lives.
We're all here for a reason. And when we do what we're really passionate about, we light up ourselves, we light up everyone around us. So if we continue, even as we're caregivers, still do what we're passionate about, even if it's probably going to be less time than you were able to before, but you're going to keep yourself more positive, and the person that you're caring for is going to benefit greatly.
Absolutely. You know, I'm a caregiver to my wife, and Marie and I were talking before the show, and I didn't even realize that I was doing that just kind of automatically, because that's just kind of the way I am. I really believe that if a caregiver doesn't take care of their own needs first, you know, everyone's going to be miserable. And so even when I was raising my daughter when she was real small, you know, and I was the caregiver, I'm sorry, I was the babysitter. I had to watch her because my wife was doing something else. And I would make sure that we went out on little dates with my four-year-old daughter, that we were both having fun. You know, and I know a lot of fathers who talk about, yeah, I'm watching my kid and we got to go here and I'm sitting through this boring thing and I'm sitting through that boring thing. They're having a great time. And I says, you know, you have to have a good time too. So I would very carefully pick activities that I enjoy, like go-kart riding. And guess what? She likes it too. Or like, you know, water sliding, and she likes it too. So, you know, we both have to have fun. That's the rules. And I told her, I says, you know, Rebecca, we both have to have fun, so what should we do today? And she'll come up with another. And I said, no, I don't like doing that. I don't like that. And she'll come up with another idea. I said, oh, you know, and we'll just go back and forth. And it's the same way with caregivers, you know. Some of you can actually go on outings with your care receiver, and some, I understand, you know, might be bedridden and they won't be able to. But I have taken up a few years ago singing, because I was also kind of a caregiver to my mother. I'll make this a quick story. We used to go to the senior center and listen to this guy sing, because the lunches were only $2. And I raised my hand one day and said, well, do you know this song? And I told him the song. He says, yeah, I know that song. And he shoved the microphone in my face. And he says, start singing it. And I don't know what happened, because normally I wouldn't, but I started singing, and everybody gave me a standing ovation. They thought I was great, and I only sing in the shower and stuff. So that launched my singing career. Now I sing at the senior center every week on Tuesdays for 2 hours, and I have a singing career. Then I took up the piano again after not touching it for 25 years, because sometimes the piano player at the senior center wouldn't show up. And I says, you know, it'd be great if I can accompany myself. So I'm doing that. I've been riding a bike avidly. I go to Mexico a couple times a year and ride a 51-mile thing. But the point is, I'm doing all this stuff because it's my passion, and I love to do it, and I come back rejuvenated, and my wife gets a better caregiver. When I'm happy, everybody is happy. So that's all I wanted to say. I probably took too long to say it, but go ahead. I lost my train of thought. Oh.
Well, you're still following that wonderful rule that you have, that we both have to have fun. And that's just amazing. Because, you know, we could look at two people doing the same thing, but somebody doing an activity with passion and excitement comes out feeling wonderful, and everybody can feel that.
But
somebody going through, oh, you know, we got to do this, they're coming out bringing everyone else down, and that's no good.
Right, and even their care receiver, you know, they don't want to feel like they're a burden to anyone. I mean, my mother kept saying over and over, as she's getting older now, as she's getting a little dementia, a little confusion, I don't want to be a burden to my children. Well, nobody wants to be a burden to anybody. And if you're happy and if you're following your passion, then they're not going to feel that way. And that's one less burden that you're going to place on them. Now they're worrying about you and being a burden. And, you know, that's a source of depression and suicide. These things happen. Our doctor told us that women take their lives with pills and men use a gun. And we don't even want to go there. We're going to talk a little later about the grief process because depression is part of that and how we can just try to avoid depression and just get through this because acceptance is where we want to be in the grief process.
Yes, we do want to be at that acceptance place. And when I was the keynote speaker for the caregiver conference this spring, the themes were the three M's. And the first theme is motivation. What I did was I showed, I don't know if anybody has seen the movie The Intouchables, but it's about a man that is paralyzed from his neck down. And the movie starts off with him interviewing caregivers. And he wanted nothing to do with the caregivers that had degrees, that were, you know, patronizing to him, oh, I'll take good care of you and pat him on the head. He wanted the guy off the street that had no experience but was fun. And the adventures that they had were great. This caregiver off the street had no pity for him, and that's exactly what he wanted. He wanted somebody that was going to take him out and ride fast in a car in the middle of the night. And he wanted somebody that would take him in his wheelchair and run and play. And they went parachuting at the end of the movie. This was a real story. And, you know, that is, yes, it's Hollywood. Not everybody has the money to go parachuting. But it's that feeling of they had fun together. Mm-hmm. And he also, this man was lonely. There was a woman that he would write to, and he was afraid to meet in person. But this caregiver got him to meet her, and addressing those inner needs that we all have as humans for connection. And it just, so that was our motivation. And the second M is movement. During the birthday party they had for this man, they had a symphony orchestra playing, and the caregiver was like, oh, what is this? And he put dance music on, and he was dancing and had the other people dancing, and someone felt down, and, you know, the man was sitting there watching, laughing, having a blast, watching other people have fun. So movement is something we can do, you know, even if the person we're caring for can't move, the music can inspire them. Them seeing us dance and have fun helps them to feel better.
Oh, absolutely. You know, my wife is in an electric wheelchair, and, you know, whenever we find ourselves at a wedding or something, she's pretty bold. She just goes out on the dance floor in her chair, and she's going forward and backwards to the left, to the right, and I'm kind of dancing with her. So she absolutely knows how to have fun. But that sounds like a great movie. I don't think I've ever seen that. What's the name of it again so I can rent that?
It's called Intouchables, I-N-touchables. It's a French movie with English subtitles and based on a true story.
Wow. Well, thank you. That's awesome. Now, I understand that you published some inspiration cards. Tell us what that's all about.
These inspiration cards are awesome because they're a quick way to shift your mood. So just picking one card a day can be a great way to look at your life in a different way. So I picked a card right before this show, and it's a courage card. All of the cards begin with, what is the challenge that keeps me from having courage? Mm-hmm. Or what is the challenge that keeps me from having joy or hope or vision? So this is the courage card, and it says, when I have waited a long time to address my fears, they seem so big. I need to slow down and address one issue at a time. And the healing activity is I create a worry list and then prioritize what should be handled first, second, third. And So that's a great activity because often we have so many worries, they roll around in our head. If we just write them down and tackle one at a time, it's much more manageable.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And how does someone get these inspiration cards?
The inspiration cards are at sparksalive.com, and there's a tab with products to the inspiration cards. So it's sparksalive.com.
And that's your website. That's how someone can get a hold of you if they want to.
Yes, and you can get free gifts there as well. I have free gifts like you do. There's
free gifts.
Inspiration,
I love free
stories.
Gifts.
Yes, free gifts. There's inspiration stories and also a passion quiz, so you can see how passionately you're living your life.
Really? I can see how passionately I'm living my life. So just based on what you know about me, where would I score on your passion quiz, in your opinion?
I would say you are very high.
Very high.
You're living your life passionately.
Well, you know, I'm a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur. And the first thing you learn in business is that if you want to be successful in business, you have to be doing what you are passionate about. You know, if you are like a nurse and you hate the medical industry, you're in the wrong business, and vice versa. So I guess it works in caregiving as well. Go figure.
Oh, it works for every area of life.
So you're an author. Tell us about your book. What was your book about?
Well, it's called Living Passionately, 21 People Who Found Their Purpose and How You Can Too. The reason that I wanted to write this book is I know so many people who have really amazing lives. They've overcome tremendous challenges, and despite that, they're living their passions. And one of those people that I definitely wanted to get the story of is my daughter, who just couldn't decide what she wanted to major in college. In fact, we were in the emergency room in the middle of the night. She was having a panic attack because of this. And so I knew then I would do anything to help her find her passion, her inspiration in life. So when the earthquake struck in Haiti in 2010, we both got on a plane, went down there, helped knock down a school that was damaged. And over these years, we have helped rebuild that school.
Wow.
So the story... Yes, very, very cool, and not only did she find her passion, but I found mine. I left my other job, started
wow.
my business Sparks, started writing and teaching and creating, so it's been a huge shift for all of us.
Wow. You know, that sounds like my grandson, Josh. Yes, I have 7 grandchildren, believe it or not. And Josh is my oldest, and he was an electrician because everybody told him, you need a good job. Electricians are nice and steady, and he was making a ton of money as an electrician. But his passion was cooking. He would always watch the cooking shows. And so one day, and he had his parents' support, he says, you know, I just want to go for it. They says, well, do what you're passionate about. He quit his job, and he went to work for a restaurant just doing the stuff that, you know, you start at the bottom. And he worked his way up, and they realized that he had a lot of gifts and talents. They put him in the kitchen, and he started planning menus and stuff. And now him and a friend who was in the restaurant started another restaurant. He worked there for a while. And now he's in Alaska doing this new concept called pop-up restaurants, where you take reservations 2-3 months in advance. People pay like $95 for a dinner for two, including drinks. They don't know what they're going to get. They don't know what's on the menu, but they know it's going to be great and new and different. And in Anchorage, Alaska, I guess, you know, gourmet food may not be as plentiful as down here in L.A., and they're doing great. They sold out 3 months already, and he's just living his passions up there in Anchorage, Alaska. And I'm kind of jealous, but I'm very happy for him. I have nothing to be jealous about because I've lived my passions all my life. I'm very happy. I can die a very happy man. Most people would be very fortunate to live the life that I've lived. So, way to go, Josh.
That's
I want to ask you Who are these other 21 people besides your daughter? Who, I mean, what kind of people are they? What are their stories about? Give me some examples.
There are people from both the United States and Haiti. In Haiti, I interviewed a child, a teenager, and an adult, and then my daughter Karina translated. So their stories are in the book, which is really powerful because their voice would not normally be heard. And, oh, they're just beautiful, amazing people. So there are other caregivers in the book and people who have overcome addiction, poverty, homelessness, lack of confidence, and trauma. And, you know, then there's my husband who just loves astronomy. And he loves teaching astronomy to people. There's no trauma there. It's just his passion and how he really enjoys sharing that with people.
Yeah, passion is a good thing. It just makes you happy. And when you're happy, you live longer and you live healthier. And just, I think that's the way the body was created to be lived, is in a happy state. And it's so sad that there's so much sadness in this world. But I used to go on mission trips to Mexico, and there's a lot of poverty down there. We would go down to the dumps, you know, which is where people put the garbage, and whole neighborhoods and communities of cardboard and styrofoam houses pop up right at the dump, because that's what they do for a living. They go through the dump and they recycle bottles and glass and stuff. Everything that you and I throw away makes its way to the dump, and there's just a whole another world down there. Mexicans recycle everything. I mean, they have bed springs that they've turned into fences, and they have tires that they turn into retaining walls. Nothing gets thrown away. Everything is recycled down there. And these kids, the point of the story is these kids are just happy. They're just having a good old time. They have no idea how miserable they are because they're making up games. They're grabbing stuff out of the dump, and they, you know, pretend it's a gun, or they grab something else. They pretend it's this and that. But, you know, so happiness and passion has nothing to do with how much money you have or how rich you are, how poor you are. I've seen poor people who are living on a dirt floor, who have to walk 5 miles to get their water, more passionate and happy about life than many millionaires and billionaires. So there you go.
Yes, and when people are creative and thinking in new ways, that makes them happy. And
absolutely,
just having money doesn't mean that you're creative and passionate and moving forward. So it's not money that makes the difference. It's passion and creativity. And
amen.
You know, you're reminding me, there is a wonderful group called the Landfill Harmonic. They make beautiful instruments out of garbage, and it's like a symphony orchestra, the quality of what they make.
Really?
Yeah, they're out of South America. If you look up Landfill Harmonic, amazing, amazing, amazing.
That doesn't surprise me. You know, I happen to know for a fact that God is a recycler, because the Bible says he takes everything bad that has happened to us, and if we trust him and give it to him, he turns it around and it becomes good. And many good things today in my life would never have happened if these bad things didn't happen. For example, Charlene's stroke and so on. And I've heard that story so many times. That's why I call God the eternal recycler. We're going to go on another break, but we will be back in a couple of minutes, and we'll continue our discussion. Thank you.
Great.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years after she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassar.
And we are back with Maria Blanc, expert on helping caregivers find their passion so that they actually enjoy life and actually enjoy the caregiving responsibilities that they have so that everyone can be happy, putting our masks on first. Maria, I see that you are really big on music to help inspire. Tell us what you feel is so important about inspirational music, and then I want to play a little clip that you and I spoke about as an example of an inspirational music. I've got like a 60-second clip of a song.
Music touches our soul, and it gets us moving and seeing things in a different light. It's very powerful. When I was just visiting my brother recently, I told you that I massaged his legs one day, his arms the next day, and then I was trying to think of what we could do because the mood was low in the room because he was really struggling. And so I got my phone out and I found a music mix on Songza, put that on, and as soon as the music started playing, my mom and I started talking more, and the mood lifted in the room. It's music is magic.
Wow. Well, let me play this song. Everybody, prepare to hear some magic for the next 52 seconds.
There's a little flame inside a song. Sunshine bright, sunshine small. The rains will come and the waters rise. But don't you ever lose your light.
Feel magical? Tell us about this song, Maria.
This is a song that I remember singing as a little girl with my church group and, you know, just belting out the words. It made me feel so good and feel so special. And it's nice to have this adult version of the song because we all do have a light inside of us, and the attitude that we choose, no matter what challenges we face, affects how bright that light shines.
Yes, I totally agree. I love that song, and I've never heard it arranged like that. I really like that arrangement. Wow. Let me ask you another question. What do you say to a caregiver that says that they have no time to pursue their passions or cannot break away from their responsibilities to do anything for themselves? I mean, you've heard this before, right? It's a good common excuse.
Yes, I've heard this before, and sometimes there may not be much time in the day, but just to step outside in nature, take a few deep breaths, and look around at what is happening outside of where you are is the break you need to keep going. And that's enough to get you to the next time when you have the ability to get away. And using their friendly visitor programs, that's another volunteer effort that my daughter was involved with. So she would go to visit elderly people, people who are shut-ins, and there's lots of resources out there. It's just, you know, finding those connections, going back to the care formula, find connections, ask for help, make sure you fit some recreation in, and experience everything. Now, recreation can be putting on music in the room where you're caring for the person and dancing. You get exercise, your mood lifts, and that person is seeing you enjoying life, and they're not feeling badly that they're a burden on you. Win-win for everybody.
Absolutely. That's great advice. We have about 8 minutes left in the show, so I want to get the most out of this. I want to talk a little bit about the grief process. You know, there is denial. This isn't happening. There is... Let's go ahead and just talk about what you know about the grief process and how we can get through it and not kind of go around it, because you can't go around it. Can't cheat, right?
That's right. There's no cheating. And in the beginning of the grieving process, there is denial, and that's not such a bad thing because sometimes there's just too much for us to handle and we feel numb. And that numbness is a protection. So when we're in a place where we're able to feel and we're able to process what the heck just happened, then it's time to really feel what's going on and allow yourself to cry and scream and be angry. All emotions are okay. We often think when something happens that we're supposed to cry, but we don't always feel like crying. Mm-hmm. We all have a different process to go through. So to really feel what's happening all the way along the process, it's great to cry, to scream, but not to get stuck in that, to let it go through and then shift to another activity. Get outside, go for a walk, call somebody, do something to shift to a different place, to a better mood.
Yeah, that's great.
Those are really important. And I'll tell you, one of the authors in our book, Allison Orlando, she lost her mother when she was just 8 years old.
Mm.
Absolutely devastating. The way that she healed from that is to give exactly what she was missing so badly. She found that if she mothered other people and helped them get through hard times, that her life was better. So she traveled to South America, helped build homes with Habitat for Humanity. She went to India and actually met Mother Teresa and worked with the people who were on their last legs and dying.
Wow.
And she coaches people now. So by mothering, she healed her grief from losing her mother.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, what about anger? Is anger a good thing? Because they're going to go through it.
Anger is a powerful emotion. And especially for women, there's an idea that women aren't supposed to be angry. But anger is a sign that something is wrong. And so if we can listen to the message that the anger is bringing, something is wrong, something needs to change here, and what are we going to do to change it? So take that energy of anger and put it into a constructive way to find solutions.
Okay. And then bargaining. What have you got to say about bargaining?
Bargaining. You know what? I'm going to have you talk about bargaining. So this is something that I haven't experienced
much
in the grieving process.
I have found that when someone is going through the grief, you know, there's the denial, and then when they're over that, they get angry. And when they get over that, they realize that being angry is not going to help anything. Then they start looking for a way to negotiate their way out of this. Now, a lot of problems you cannot negotiate out of, like death or cancer. The simplest example I can give you is if when someone's going through the loss of a breakup, like boyfriend, girlfriend, and there's no greater loss than love that you cannot have. You can't sleep, you can't eat, you're miserable, you know, you're just love sick. And so you call up the person and you say, can we still be friends? trying to negotiate, trying to bargain so that all the cords aren't cut. But when you're coming to death or cancer, it's not quite so easy to negotiate or bargain. God usually comes into the story and you say, look, God, if you just heal my wife, I promise I'll go to church every Sunday and I'll do this and I'll do that, you know. Or the classical foxhole Christian who finds himself in Vietnam, for example, and bullets are whizzing over his head, and he makes a deal with God that if he gets him out of this alive, you know, he'll do such and such. So that's kind of the bargaining situation. And it usually doesn't work in the grief process. But then we get to depression. You want to talk about that for a little bit?
So when we're depressed, we are in a place where we've lost something that we didn't want to get rid of. And even getting out of bed in the morning can be hard. We're not sure of what our purpose in life is. And even taking one step and doing one thing is really difficult. So depression definitely happens to caregivers. I know with my mom, when Evan was born, she had trouble eating. She had trouble sleeping because she was so depressed. And as, you know, we got help for Evan and some answers and she got support, that lifted and she was able to eat again and sleep better and get back to a normal life. But depression is definitely a part of the grieving process.
Yes, and I love your prescription of passion, because I think if a lot of depressed people just found some passion in things that they liked, maybe when they were younger, you know, maybe they used to sing, and now they don't sing anymore because they don't think they're good enough. But just finding passion again in singing, I think, could heal a depressed person. Now, unless, of course, it's a clinical depression, and maybe they need to see their doctor and have an antidepressant prescribed. You know, those things do happen. But I think maybe a lot of depression can be cured by simply looking inside and answering that question, what are you passionate about? What did you used to love to do? And dig deep inside and find out, because passion is in there somewhere. I mean, it doesn't die, does it?
No, passion doesn't die, and you're right to look back to what you used to like to do. And I know when I went to visit my mom, you know, it's a six-hour drive. I didn't really feel like doing anything when I got there, but I thought, Mom, let's meet at the pool. We'll go for a swim, and, you know, my feet are in the water. I don't feel like getting in. I don't want to do this. It wasn't a depression. It was just like, oh, I just want to, you know, rest somewhere. But I got in, and I swam laps. She got in and swam, and both of us felt better.
Yep.
So sometimes we may not feel like doing something, but if we just get out there and move our body, then that's the beginning.
Yeah, the most important thing you have to know about the grief process is that it is a process. You're not going to get over this stuff overnight. You know, some person might go through it in 6 months. Some person might take a year. Some people might take 5 years. Some people, after 10 years, are still dealing with it. But I think probably they haven't been dealing with it as well as they could have, because every person is different. Everyone grieves differently. But I believe if they're getting the help, if they're getting the support, if they're getting just the surrounding yourself with people who are guiding you in the right direction and being a support to you and reminding you that there are things that you can be passionate about, I think you can get through it much quicker than if you didn't. And then something magical happens. All of a sudden, you wake up one day, and you feel good. And you know what happened? You have accepted your situation. You have accepted. That's called acceptance. And my wife came to a point in her life that she just accepts what happened. In her mind, you know, she's a Christian and believes that God orchestrates everything in our lives, good and bad, for his purpose, for our purpose. And she just came to the conclusion, listen, God is sovereign in my life. I believe that. I just believe that there's a reason and a purpose in this. And you just are overtaken with a sense of peace and purpose and joy that can come from nowhere else. So that's the benefits of acceptance. So that's the goal. Get to acceptance. But take your time if you need the time. But if you've been neglecting dealing with these emotions in the grief process, then deal with them, because they're not going to go away. You can't just shut the door on them and keep opening the door, peeking, oh, you're still there, and slam the door. They are not going anywhere. You have to deal with this. You have to get through with this. If you haven't cried, you have to cry, and so on. So on that note, is there anything, any words of advice in your great wisdom, Maria, that you have for our caregiving audience in the final minutes as we close?
I will say to remember the care formula. Make connections, ask for help, go out for recreation, and experience everything.
Well, that sounds like great advice, and I want to thank you for coming on the show and taking the time to allow me to interview you. I want to thank my listeners for tuning in, and this show is recorded. It will be on my website 24 hours, 7 days a week, and that address again is davenass.com. And if you can't remember that, just remember the name of my show, Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver.com. That will work also. Maria, thank you again, and God bless you, and I hope your book is very, very successful, and good luck with that.
Thanks so much, Dave. Anyone interested in checking out the book can go to peoplelivingpassionately.com.
peoplelivingpassionately.com. And your other address, your other website for other information that they want from you or to communicate with you is sparksalive.com. Did
yes,
I get that right?
sparksalive.com.
And do you want to share your email or no?
Sure. My email is maria@sparksalive.com.
Well, that sounds simple enough. Thank you so much, and we will see everybody next week, same time, Wednesday noon Pacific time. That's 3 o'clock Eastern. And have a great day.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.